Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is John Hodgman, whose book Vacation Land, True Stories from Painful Beaches, is out in paperback. I first came to know John's work during his appearances on Comedy Central's The Daily Show, and plus I read his Judge John Hodgman column every Sunday morning in the New York Times Magazine. In Vacation Land, John takes us on his family's relocation from western Massachusetts and coastal Maine, as well as his own personal journey through middle age. John, Vacation Land, in paperback, it was a new type of writing endeavor for you. Your first three books, they were all New York Times bestsellers, very funny and really fake almanacs of sorts. After this book's been out a while, what's been your level of satisfaction as the readers take in this memoir of sorts?
100% satisfaction. Thank you very much. It was a real change of pace for me to write this way. As you note, I had really played a character of John Hodgman on The Daily Show, at first the resident expert and then the deranged millionaire, with an emphasis on deranged. My humor was very much the humor of the absurd, and that was reflected in my first three books, which were collections of lists of incredible trivia and historical true facts that I had made up. So, like, a list of the nine U.S. presidents who secretly had hooks for hands. And this kind of humor really made me laugh and really made me happy for a number of years. But when I finished the third book, I really didn't feel like I could make another crazy fake fact joke up. And now, of course, everyone's doing fake news and alternative facts. It's not cool anymore. So I was kind of left with nothing but the awful truth of my own life as a actual person named John Hodgman with a terrible actual beard and real human children and a wife and a family and a life. And I just decided to write very plainly about it, humorously, but without artifice. And it was a bit of a risk because I didn't know anyone was interested in the actual me. But I'm glad to say that people didn't hate it. And the work itself, Vacation Land, ended up being some of my favorite writing.
Well, and not only your previous works, but this work, it's very smart humor, right? I mean, it kind of reminds me of the humor that you would see in a New Yorker cartoon, right?
I would hope that it would be a little bit less confusing than a New Yorker cartoon.
Well, okay. I
can never figure out what those are about, but yes.
All right.
I mean, smart, sure, but I mean, I think anyone who reaches a certain point in their lives, especially if they have kids, and begin to appreciate that they're not who they think they are. In other words, there are stories that we tell ourselves about how that we construct throughout our 20s and our 30s about how our life is going and who we are within that life. And then somewhere in the 40s and definitely into your 50s, which I am not yet, but looking forward to grimly, we start to realize that those stories have changed. We're actually no longer becoming something in our lives. We have ended up as something. And I'm lucky and that I've ended up as something that I enjoy, a weird white male monster with bad facial hair in the midst of a career that makes me happy. But those transitions and those changes, I think, are stuff that we all go through, even if you're not ever been on television.
Well, your facial hair, you've mentioned it a couple times, and that sort of is sort of an overarching theme of the entire book. Why'd you pick that particular aspect of your life to use for that foundation there?
Well, I think like most wives, my wife hates my beard and reminds me of it. And she's not wrong. I don't know why I grew this beard. It's patchy. It's asymmetrical. You know, it basically makes me look like the bookkeeper for the Church of Satan. And yet I felt a certain compulsion to grow a beard once I reached my early 40s, because, you know, I think all clean-shaven men who haven't want to grow a beard to see what secret bearded man lives inside of them. And as I say, I did not expect that person would be the part-time bookkeeper for the Church of Satan, or probably more accurately, the IT guy for the Duck Dynasty. But that's who I am. It was part of a journey of hirsute self-discovery. But I know what it looks like, and the part of the aspect of the book is, you know, acknowledging, you know, you can only grow the beard you can grow. We only are who we are.
You're in real life a New Yorker. You live in Brooklyn, one of the boroughs. And I would think, just not being from there, that there's enough to do in New York that you wouldn't need to get away to Massachusetts or Maine. But a lot of New Yorkers who can afford to do so still try to get out of town anytime they can. Why?
Well, the truth is, I've lived in New York for 24 years now, but I would never call myself a New Yorker. I mean, certainly no one who grew up in New York would call me a New Yorker, and I am from New England. I grew up outside of Boston in Massachusetts, and I spent a lot of my youth in western Massachusetts. And my wife, whom I've known since we were in high school together in Massachusetts, spent a lot of her growing up on her grandmother's house and property in Maine. And I think that something happens, you know, you reach out in your youth, in your 20s, for the big city. But something happens, you know, as you get older, where you want to go home again or as close to it. And so, you know, my mom passed away when I was 29 and left my wife and I this house, this sort of small, not very attractive cabin in the hills of rural western Massachusetts, and that's where we went to learn how to be grown-ups, because we didn't, you know, we had only ever lived in apartments in New York, which were basically glorified dorm rooms. We never had to, you know, we never had to clean a gutter, or if anything happened with the plumbing, we didn't fix it. We would just call a surrogate dad of some kind, a superintendent or a landlord. Going out into the woods and taking care of this house, or in our case, not doing a very good job of taking care of it, taught us in many ways how to be responsible adults. And then as time went on, my wife really wanted to go back to Maine, which was the place that she loves, you know, more than any other place or, frankly, person on earth. And we just sort of followed those deep generational callings to go back to places that are not particularly welcoming or comfortable, but you know, if you're someone like me who never really feels strongly that he deserves happiness, a vacation in Maine is just the ticket.
Well, and I think the part in the book where you discuss this was Pennsylvania, but you talk about your family's pet dwarf hamster, if I remember correctly, and you talk about what's the great moral paradox of caring for an animal like that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when you live in a city, you might have a pet or two, and you might see a squirrel or maybe a raccoon will try to come in your window. It happened once. They're pretty good sneak thieves. But when you get out into the countryside, you realize that you are encroaching, that nature doesn't want you there, and it will do what it has to get you out. It will infest your house with ants and wasps and all kinds of animals will come and use your porch as a latrine, and your house will be infested with mice. And it's just waiting for you to disappear, much like all of nature is waiting for us all to disappear. And then you start to confront some of the strange moral paradoxes, as you put it. For me, it came in taking care of a pet dwarf hamster at the end of its life cycle. And if anyone has ever had a dwarf hamster, you know that its life cycle begins to end about 2 weeks after you bring it home from the pet store, where it contracts some mysterious illness and stops eating and starts becoming sort of a ragged, half-filled, furry, hacky sack full of bones. And you're trying to keep it alive, force-feeding it medicine through an eyedropper that some veterinarian has sold you as in an act of incredible con artistry for $500, and there you are in your kitchen in the country trying to keep this thing alive, while meanwhile, just through the other door in the garage out there, you're literally killing, you know, dozens of field mice a week with traps and poison. Field mice and dwarf hamsters are indistinguishable creatures. They're rodents of a completely identical and usual size. The only difference between them, honestly, is that I chose one of them, this one that I'm trying to keep alive, to care about. This is the one that I gave an identity and a name to. Flurry was the name of the hamster. And even Flurry understood that this was a high level of cognitive dissonance. Flurry was trying to put, you know, get the eyedropper out of her mouth, going like, no, this is crazy, I'm not going to live. And I'm like, no, you're going to hang in there, Flurry. Let me just put you rest here while I go out into the garage and see how many of your cousins I've killed. That's the paradox. That's the cognitive dissonance of being in the country and taking care of animals while also fighting them off.
Now, well, we're talking with John Hodgman about his new book, Vacation Land. Well, it's not a new book, but it came out last year, and it's out in paperback now. So if you were too cheap to buy the hardcover, go buy the paperback now because it's fantastic. John, the whole idea about Maine came from your wife's side of the family. That's why you started going there. You describe in the subtitle about the painful beaches. But when you write about Maine, it's with a lot of ambivalence. Why?
Well, you know, it's a strange place. First of all, it was not originally my place. I would go there and visit with my wife, and the first feelings that I ever had about Maine are, why are we here? Why would someone go on vacation to a place where the ocean is cold and wants to kill you? You know, it is so cold that the moment you get into it, every cell in your body screams, why? You have free will. What are you doing here? And then you jump out of the water, and the beaches offer no refuge because they're made out of sharp rocks and knives. I mean, it's an incredibly, scientists have gone out there and discovered beaches that are pleasant to be on, with soft, warm sand and welcoming, inviting water, places that make you feel comfortable and happy, and yet people still go to Maine, and I found it to be fascinating. But I think that there is a certain, obviously people live in Maine, and a lot of people move to Maine voluntarily. Even though it is a rugged place that reminds you at all times that nature doesn't care whether you live or die. And I think that that is, in a weird way, part of the attraction. A vacation in Maine, I mean, Maine is called Vacation Land. That's what it says on the sign as you cross the Piscataqua Bridge. Welcome to Vacation Land. And it feels a little bit like a cruel joke, but then you realize some people prefer a vacation that tests them and does not offer them merely pleasure, but also a measure of existential dread. And over time, I realized I'm one of those people. I love it. I'm here now. I'm speaking to you from the Press Hotel in Portland, Maine, and I've been driving around Maine for the past couple of days, and I'm heading back home now, but I can't wait to come back.
Well, you know, when I think about tourists in Maine, and you've said in the book, I believe, that it's more important for a tourist to listen rather than talk. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I would say a tourist is someone who's there to go get something out of a place. And that's why the word has such a bad connotation, because, you know, a tourist is someone who, locust-like, descends on a location and tries to strip it of its resources to get the view or the food or the atmosphere or a trip through the park or to see the sights or whatever else. And I think that what we all should strive to be more is a visitor, visitors to a place. You know, if you're a visitor, that connotes a certain amount of respectful politeness. You're there on purpose to experience what life is like in another place. And rather than push and demand, it makes more sense to just see what it has to offer you. And I think that in Maine in particular, you know, the Mainers appropriately have a very ambivalent relationship with the tourists, because these tourists come in and clog up their roads and they clog up their parks and they demand lobster rolls and directions and house cleaning and landscaping and everything else. And they can be a little bit much to deal with if they're rude, especially, but the Mainers rely on tourism as a huge part of their economy. And so I think that, you know, Mainers have a reputation for being a little flinty and mean with visitors. You know, the motto of the state really should be putting the spite in hospitality since 1820. But in fact, what I've found is that if you come into a place like Maine or any place in the world and you spend more time listening, putting on your passive sonar and just taking in what the culture is and trying to understand it rather than talking and demanding and giving your story, pretty quickly you will be, if not accepted, at least tolerated. And I don't think it's a bad lesson for life in general. When you walk into a strange room, don't start barking out your story. Start seeing what that story is already happening in that room.
All right. Well, the book is Vacation Land, True Stories from Painful Beaches by John Hodgman. It's available in paperback now. Go out and pick it up. And also read every Sunday in the New York Times Magazine, the Judge John Hodgman column. You're not a real judge, right?
No, I'm not a real judge, but I'll point out that the column in the New York Times Magazine is a complement to a weekly podcast called Judge John Hodgman, where people call in from all over the world with very minor disputes, and I adjudicate them, and it's a lot of fun. So while I am not a real judge, I do fake it, both in print and on fake internet radio, the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
All right. It's a great read, and check out the podcast as well. John Hodgman, Vacation Land, thanks for joining us to talk about it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.